President and veno houseplant Joe Biden says he will not call off his campaign for re-election just because his debate performance proved he should call off his campaign for re-election. In a statement made to a mop, which he mistook for a 12-year-old girl with really nice-smelling hair, Biden said, quote, "Just because I had one bad debate doesn't mean I can't shenagan boygen sobis fabendubin. Sure, I'm not moving as well as I used to, and my voice sounds rough sometimes, and when it comes to going to the bathroom, it can be virtually impossible and then suddenly take me completely by surprise. And sometimes I wake up in the middle of the afternoon and find myself surrounded by people talking to me about Ukraine. And I've already explained that the Ukraine money is safely hidden in one of my shell companies. But the point is, yes, I've lost some of my faculties, maybe all of my faculties. But if you think that's going to stop me from waging nuclear war at the highest possible level, well, all I can say is just watch me. If there's one thing I've learned in all my years in government, it's that you've got to take a stand, because walking is really, really hard. So for anyone who thinks I'm senile, let me ask you one question. Why does this little girl's hair smell like cleaning fluid?" Unquote. President Biden made his statement to the attractive mop despite fears expressed by his top donors, often in the form of hysterical high-pitched screams or just by sitting curled up in a corner of the kitchen floor, quietly sobbing, "Please, please give me back my money." The crisis in the Biden campaign arose after a subpar debate performance in which the president stared into empty space, slack-jawed and drooling, before droning incomprehensibly and repeatedly saying, "Look, here's the deal," for no discernible reason, then finally declaring war on Romania under the impression it was Hungary and had fired a missile at Bulgaria, by which Biden meant Sweden, after which he fell off the podium, rolled out the stage door, and ran naked through the street, shouting, "Olly, olly, oxen free." The White House explained the president was suffering from a cold and said he would do much better in the next debate if they could find a sorcerer to make time run backward. In the aftermath, several journalists who had repeatedly declared that Biden was sharp as a tack changed their tunes. For instance, Carl, "This is worse than Watergate" Bernstein said, quote, "This is worse than Watergate. During Watergate, I could take vengeance on Richard Nixon for being completely right about communism, and they made a movie about it in which I was played by Dustin Hoffman. But now I just look like a low, dishonest fool who kept cheating on my various wives until I morphed into a fat old woman living off a past moment of false glory by constantly declaring everything is worse than Watergate, which is worse than Watergate," unquote. Conversely, MSNBC's Joe Scarborough shredded his reputation before the debate by lying to cover up the president's obvious senility, but after the debate, he gathered up the shreds of his reputation, jammed them into a trash compactor, ground them to dust, then swallowed the dust in great handfuls until he choked on it while squeezing out his dying words, "Joe Biden is fine." The New York Times, a former newspaper, reacted to the debate by calling on Biden to resign in an editorial which said in part, quote, "Joe Biden has had a long and honorable career of serving his country in the role of unprincipled hack with a lucrative side business and influence peddling, not to mention a mean streak as wide as Montana. But now it's time for him to step down before someone realizes this newspaper is printing complete garbage," unquote. Although some Democrat officials are trying to find a replacement for Biden, their search is hampered by Democrat identity politics, which has elevated people according to gender and skin color rather than competence, and therefore has no one in the wings who isn't as stupid and corrupt as Kamala Harris, because she's Kamala Harris. Trigger warning, I'm Andrew Klavan, and this is The Andrew Klavan Show. We are back laughing our way through the complete destruction of everything we hold dear. I hope you had a wonderful 4th of July, as you know, the holiday on which we gather together to remember what a great country we used to have. You want to write into the show, please do. We like to hear from you, and we want to hear what you have to say about what I have to say. So write to Klavan Clapbacks, that's Klavan with a K, Clapbacks with a K, at dailywire.com. Klavan Clapbacks at dailywire.com. We don't care if you love us or hate us. As long as you write in and yell at us, we will read your stuff on the air, and we'll try and give you the answers you deserve, which probably are not going to be that, you know, because look at yourself, really. Don't forget the Wednesday interview. Last week, we talked to Jonathan Carl about the unfair treatment of white people in America. And this week, we've got Gurwinder Bogal. And you may not know him. You may not have heard that name before, but he's a really, really interesting writer who is talking about the gamification of everything, of how video games have affected everything on purpose and what's that is doing to us. Leave a comment wherever you listen on DW Plus. You can hear us. You can hear us on YouTube, obviously. And if your comment is cruel and racist and sexist and just really violates every standard of decency, we will read it on the air because it'll fit right in. No one will notice. Today's comment is from Melissa Heinlein, it looks like, 6544. She says the Democrats should simply run Joe Biden as their candidate with the slogan of one banshee unburdened by one husband. I like that slogan, banshee without a husband. All right, let's get to today's episode, Chaos in the Empire of Lies. Obviously, look, everyone is talking about the political fallout of the great holy crap debate. Biden is trying to make the absurd argument that his decrepitude is a one-off, and between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. he's fine. They actually said that. This guy is really working hard between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. He's almost cogent. He met with Democrat governors, and he joked that everything is fine except for his brain. And it was a joke, and the Democrat governors did not seem to think it was that funny. They came out and were making these very vague remarks, sending mixed signals. There's a lot of increasing, basically Biden feels that he's got about 3 or 4 days to make a good impression. So he tried to do that at a 4th of July gathering. This was him speaking off the cuff without a teleprompter at the 4th of July gathering to prove that he's now got it back together. This is cut 13.
What you want to do, there's 7,000 people waiting at the gate to get in. So if I don't finish this, they can't come in. So maybe if you're hanging around, I'm going to sneak back out. That's okay, all right? Thank you, thank you, thank you. Remember that famous expression? They also serve who only stand and wait. I remember when our son was deployed, my wife would go to the stand in the sink in the morning, drinking her coffee, and saying that prayer, worried, always concerned, and all of you. So we owe you. This could not be done without the family support. So thank you, thank you, thank you. We love you, and I really mean it from the bottom of my heart.
That reassured me, I know, and they'll put out a prime-time interview this Friday with George Stephanopoulos, who will take time out from his longtime career of bullying abused women into silence to cover up for the Clintons to really do some serious journalism. I mean, if this is the guy, he actually bullied Nikki Haley. This is all he does, is bully women into silence. Nikki Haley came on and said that Joe Biden's going to have to step down. What do you mean? What are you talking about? Anyway, this is supposed to all have a good effect on people, but the donor class is having fits. The guys with the money in Hollywood, David Lindelof, a TV writer known for shows such as Lost and Watchmen, which were both obviously total pieces of crap, overrated by male teenagers between the ages of 10 and 40. He's calling for a dembargo, withholding money until the old man backs down. All of this is still unfolding. But what happened at the debate is also a cultural watershed, which is something that I like to talk about and I want to talk about today, which is the complete exposure of corporate journalism as a mouthpiece for the powerful. And I think this is an important thing that we have to see. So let's get right to chapter one, Speaking Power to Truth. So because this is a holiday weekend, because the holiday is July 4th, I want to step back from all the chaos because it's all going to resolve itself one way or another. It's an interesting political situation because the Democrats have got to get rid of Biden, but they can't get rid of Biden because he's backed up by Kamala Harris. But we'll see what happens, and that's going to just unfold as it does. But let me back up to put some of this stuff in context because so much of this is about our press and our reporting system. And because it's July 4th, I want to back up for just a second and restate some of the things that this show is about and I think the country is about. Barack Obama sent out a tweet on July 4th. It said, the 4th of July is about celebrating the big, bold, inclusive experiment that is our American democracy. And it has always been an experiment. Our democracy has never been guaranteed, which means we can't take it for granted. We need to keep fighting for it, keep improving it, and keep making sure it reflects the better angels of our nature instead of the worst. That, more than anything, is what America is all about. Now, this is the kind of nonsense that politicians spew because they don't want to be held responsible to the real things that America is about. America is not about bringing out the better angels of our nature. We are no better than any other people, except maybe the French. But it's not about diversity. The diversity is a byproduct of what America is about, is a byproduct of what makes America exceptional. I happen to like really living in a really diverse country. I think that's a very beautiful thing that has been a beautiful byproduct of America. But that's a byproduct of the fact that we are not founded on a racial idea like almost every other country on earth. We are founded on a philosophical idea, and that philosophical idea comes to us from England. It comes from Greece and Rome, and it comes from Jerusalem because of our Jewish Savior, Jesus Christ. Jewish Savior is not Ben Shapiro. We sometimes have to talk to Ben about that, but it's not. No, it comes through Jesus Christ, which is bringing Jerusalem principles, but all of these things are filtered into our country through the political philosophy that grows up through the history of the English people. And that is why we thank the white Christian men whose ideas were so brilliant that we can all of us get together and use them. And anybody who ascribes to those ideas, can become an American if he's committed to it and if he has the luck to get here. The heart of that idea has nothing to do with niceness, it has nothing to do with fairness, it has nothing to do with diversity or not being bigoted. It's two simple things. One is that people should be free. When Jefferson wrote, "All men are created equal," he obviously didn't mean that we are all equal in abilities. You know, I'm never going to play baseball like Aaron Judge. You're never going to be as physically attractive as I am. We all have different qualities. Some of us have no qualities. We're all equal in one way. This is what he meant. We're equal. We have the equal right to choose who governs us and not be tyrannized over. We have the equal right to say what we think and live the way we please as long as we're not hurting anybody else. That is the first thing. That's the only, we're supposed to be free. It's the equality part is about our freedom. This is what they meant. And second, in order that that equal right to freedom can become a reality, we cannot allow power to coagulate in any one place. And this is almost the only thing the founders argued about and discussed, is how to keep power in different places. The entire point of the Constitution is to separate power into different places with different interests, so they have to defend themselves against one another. So while the powerful are fighting with each other, we are free. So while they are hampering each other in moving forward and expanding their power, we, the people, are free. That's the whole idea, and that is what makes us original, and that is what makes us different and exceptional, and that is what makes us diverse, because anybody can play that game, right? We don't, you don't have to be, if you're from America land, to play that game. You just have to want to be a free person, and that's why people come here from all over the place. Nobody's going in the other direction. Nobody's leaving the country. Nobody's moving to Canada. All of that stuff is garbage. Everybody's coming here because of that. Those two things: we should be free, and government should be hobbled by having the power, not allowing the power to coagulate. And the original idea, by the way, which we've kind of lost, is that the Constitution names the powers, enumerates the powers that the government should have, and it has no other powers. James Madison, who wrote the Bill of Rights, at first didn't want a Bill of Rights because he said, for instance, the Constitution doesn't give the government the right to censor anybody, so they can't. Why would we have to have a First Amendment guaranteeing that people have the right to say what they want? Luckily, Madison was brought around by political exigencies because powerful people always want more power. That's why we're here in the first place. This idea, it's not libertarian, as our friends at Reason think, where the government's not allowed to do anything. It's not like our Catholic friends say, where you have the freedom to do the right thing. It is simply about separating power. We have to have a government because we're not angels, and we have to control the government because the government is run by people and they're not angels. And that's why every time the government says it's going to give you something, a good journalist would say, what's it going to cost? Because the word free has no more meaning in English than the word dragon. We have an idea of dragon, we have an idea of free, but there's no such thing in real life. So that's the kind of thing the journalist should be asking about. So this is a good thing to remember on July 4th because it puts one important political fact into perspective. Fascism and socialism are not the same things, but they are not opposites. They are two sides of one coin, and that coin has no center. The American idea is not between fascism and socialism. It's a different idea. It's a third idea. Fascism seeks to centralize power in a person or a party. That's the people who just fall in love with some candidate and they think he should be able to do whatever he wants. Socialism has this vague idea that they're going to give the power to the workers or to the people, but because people need a government, it always ends up in the hand of the government. So it always ends up in centralized government, which is going to lead us to utopia, always becomes a disaster. America is not between those two things. It is a different idea about decentralizing power and making people fight with each other so we can be free. So why do I mention all this? The debate and Biden's state of mind exposed the media as the toadies of power that they are. They're toadies of left-wing power. It doesn't matter. If they were toadies of right-wing power, they would be just as bad. They like the leftist power because they think it's going to bring utopia. It's not. They think it's good. It's good. It's nice. It's not ugly people screaming and shaking their fists. It's nice people are going to help us. Nobody's nice. Everybody wants power. Power must be separated. And the press has become the instrument of power, and that is a problem in our country. You know, I'm going to read a little bit of a post, an article by the New York Post reporter Miranda Devine, and she earned it because she was the person who basically covered the Hunter laptop story and was excoriated by the mainstream media, the servants of power. Barry Weiss wrote the same thing over at the Free Press, and she earned it by being forced out of the New York Times, where they are servants of power, and they called her a Nazi for not being a servant of power. But here's what Miranda Devine wrote. It was obvious to every reporter on the campaign trail during the 2020 campaign that Biden was suffering from some form of cognitive impairment. His aides had to haul in a teleprompter to even the tiniest event in Iowa and New Hampshire for a basic stump speech that other candidates could do in their sleep. Having covered up Biden's cognitive deficits and corruption for 4 years, the Pulitzer Prize-winning newsrooms are gaslighting us again, pretending they didn't ignore signs of dementia in the commander-in-chief or harangue the few reporters in D.C. who tried to ask questions about it. No, siree, they would have us believe they covered the story relentlessly. She goes on to talk about the fact that James Rosen, an excellent reporter, was basically barred from White House press conferences. The New York Post, Stephen Nelson, they tried to keep him out, but the journalist organization got him in. The New York Times defended the president by writing an article, how misleading videos are trailing Biden as he battles age doubts. You know, I always like to play this scene from Singing in the Rain. I know I've played it a million times. It's always worth it. Remember, Gene Hagen is forcing Debbie Reynolds to do her singing for her behind a curtain, and the guys open the curtain and expose her to the audience that she's being dubbed. Let's just play that again. I love this scene. So the audience starts laughing because she thinks she's still singing and fooling them, and they see who's behind her. And in this case, Lena Lamont is the media, and Debbie Reynolds is the Democrat Party, except nice, right? Debbie Reynolds is nice, Democrat Party, not so much. We all see them, we all see it. And anybody who doesn't see it now is guilty of what they're doing. They're guilty of lying to themselves and to everybody else around them. We all see that this is the media is an organization that supports the powerful, if the powerful are on the left. Suddenly they're caught out, and suddenly they're reporting, and here's Carl, worse than Watergate Bernstein, who's supposed to be the great reporter for exposing Richard Nixon. Let's just hear what he's saying now. This is after the debate.
Well, these are people, several of them, who are very close to President Biden, who love him, have supported him, and been among them or some people who have raised a lot of money for him. And they are adamant that what we saw the other night, the Joe Biden we saw, is not a one-off, that there have been 15, 20 occasions in the last year and a half when the president has appeared somewhat as he did in that horror show that we witnessed. And what's so significant is the people that this is coming from, and also how many people around the president are aware of such incidents, including some reporters, incidentally, who have witnessed some of them.
Including some reporters, including him. He's had this for a year and a half. Where was he? You know, this is a big thing about the Watergate story, is Nixon was right about communism, and Nixon was right about Alger Hiss as being a Soviet spy, and the press excoriated him for it, and they hated him for being right, and they got him dead to rights. Nixon did bad things, and they caught him. But they could have written the same story. The Washington Post could have written the same stories about John F. Kennedy, except they were partying with him in Hyannisport or wherever they were partying with him, and they were part of his power structure, and so they didn't. So they got Nixon dead to rights, but they got him for a reason, and now they really don't even go after anybody on the left at all. It is not... This is really important because I know that most of us are, consider ourselves conservatives. It's not about left and right. It's about power. It's not about fascism versus socialism. It's about who is for the founding and who is against it. You know, good people can argue about the founding, and good people can argue about where we should go and how much of this or that there should be. But if you're not for the founding, you are for some system of coagulating power, of collecting power. And the press is now against us because they are with the power. And that's the worst part of our situation. It's worse than anything that Biden or Trump will do, is the fact that we have no one representing the truth except people like us, people like who are independents, you know, the guys who are on Substack, the guys who are at the New York Post on their own. These are the people we have to turn to. And, you know, sometimes they get it wrong, but at least they're trying. They're trying. And we know that they are on our side, on the side of the people. You know, if Trump, they keep bringing up Trump all the time. But if Trump were the power, Trump with all his flaws, if he were the power, all the forces of bureaucratic hell would not have combined to thwart him, right? You know, he doesn't have the courts they brought against him. He doesn't have the bureaucracy they brought against him. Hollywood, the academe, you know, the universities, the press, all of these things, if they're the resistance, who are they resisting? Us, the people. They're resisting the people because they have become for the power. Again, not about left and right, simply about whether you are for the founding principle or not. So this is from CNN, right? This is CNN reporting. President Joe Biden's White House repeatedly and aggressively shot down reports on the president's age and any possible limitations on his ability. But after a shaky debate performance last week in which Biden routinely struggled to get his point across, some in the White House press corps say they wish they had pushed harder to tell the story. Oh, they have regrets. They have regrets. In June, when the Wall Street Journal published a lengthy piece on President Joe Biden's mental state, the newspaper got slammed. The White House, its allies, and some of the media, including CNN's reliable sources, criticized the journal for quoting mostly Republican political votes on the record, because the Democrats, of course, wouldn't go on the record. CNN reported Tuesday that reporters working from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue are now expressing regret for not pursuing the political bombshell more seriously. Some are admitting they didn't want to feed into the right-wing talking point. The right-wing media was calling him senile from day one, and that wasn't true. That is nonsense. What's amazing about that is they think that's an excuse. They think that's an excuse. Conservatives were right about the lab leak, Hunter Biden's laptop. They're right about there's plenty of evidence for Joe Biden being part of Hunter Biden's influence peddling scheme. Every time they say there's no evidence, they can say there's no proof. But the only reason there's no proof is they haven't put him on trial. Conservatives get things wrong. Of course, everybody gets things wrong. Some of the people on our side are almost as dishonest as Nancy Pelosi and as stupid as AOC. You know, we've got our bad guys, too. It's not the press's job to use us as an excuse. It's their job to find out the facts without fear and favor. They don't do their job because they think one form of coagulated power is better than another. They are not for the founding. They don't even understand the founding. They think it's about being nice. These are people who use the term gender-affirming care to refer to castrating children and cutting girls' breasts off for no reason except one angry lesbian college professor says gender is a masquerade. And I'm not attacking transgender people. I'm not attacking lesbians. I'm simply saying that this one angry woman put out a book that I read from cover to cover. It is a complete grift. I'm not going to go into it now, but the point is they just adopt this stuff. All the style guys say use this word about black people instead of that word. It's always left-wing stuff. It's never right-wing stuff. It's exactly wrong. They think the left is better than the right. We're all people, we're all sinful, we're all broken. That's why you have to make power separate. That's what the founding is about. It's not about being nice, it's not about being fair, it's not about being unbigoted. We're all those things, hurrah. So what, we're human beings. It's about keeping power, the power separated. The media is supposed to speak truth to power, but instead they speak power to truth because it's now run by a professional class of elites. It used to be a working class profession for smart guys who hated everybody in power, but now it's run by a professional class who are trained in universities. It's all collected on the coasts. There are no press, local press anymore. It's owned by giant corporations who are always on the side of big government because it destroys competition and only big business can afford to get around it. You remember we had Nellie Bowles. We interviewed Nellie Bowles on the left. She was working at the Times. She wrote the book Morning After the Revolution. The New York Times would not let her report on left-wing violence until after the Biden election because they are in support of power. These are 25-year-old kids who went to Yale and think they're for the people. They're going to tell black people. You know, being black is not about being black. It's about not having power. That's what it's about. People with power, and there are people without power, and that's it. They blame Trump, but they're lying because they did the same thing to W and to Mitt Romney. They say, well, since Trump, we've had to fight extra hard for the Democrat Party. All crap. It's just absolute crap. If you're working for the New York Times, you're not fighting the powerful. You are the powerful. You are serving them. And so now, if Biden steps down and Kamala takes his place, and remember, who was it? Willie Brown? Was that the name of the guy she slept with to get into politics? Yeah, and he supported her. He always said she's going to be president because people underestimate her. She is a great tactician, essentially. He said she's great at strategy. She will maneuver her way into the White House. And he said she was going to do it before Biden had a second term. So now it looks like, yeah, she's doing pretty well. But just remember, she said this is cut four.
I was in almost every meeting with the president, and the president was in front of and on top of it all, coordinating and directing leaders who are in charge of America's national security, not to mention our allies around the globe.
So she's a liar. She's been doing the same thing, gaslighting everybody. So when the press starts to stand up for her, remember, it's the power. You know, the people who believe in power, the people who have power, they want to turn us against one another, right? And this is one of the reasons I'm always fighting, even with the right. The enemy is not white people. It's not black people. It's not Jews. It's not Christians. It's not atheists. It's the power. It is always the people who have the power. They want us to hate each other for the color of our skin. They want us to hate gay guys, and they want to, you know, anybody will turn, they want us to turn against one another. The anger in your heart or my heart is their weapon. The hatred in our hearts is their weapon. That is why I just want to know, are you for the founding? Then we can talk. Because if you're not, and all you want to do is collect the power, and that's what Joe Biden has been about, then you are not on the right side. You are not on the American side. And the press is no longer on that side. They are the, Trump was, this was just exactly right. They're the enemy of the people, not because they're trying to destroy the people, but they're protecting the power. And they should be doing the exact opposite. Chapter 2, Full Court Press. The idea of power is what you have to follow with the Supreme Court, because the really big news has been coming out of the Supreme Court. While all this stuff is happening, this political news, which is exciting and interesting, and I'm fascinated by it, but the real news is happening in the Supreme Court as they came out with their final rulings for this year. And the reactions, which is absurd. 6-3 decision on ideological lines written by John Roberts that gave the president immunity in his official actions. Here's what he said. Under our constitutional structure of separated powers, the nature of presidential power entitles a former president to absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for actions within his conclusive and preclusive constitutional authority. And he is entitled to at least a presumptive immunity from prosecution for all his official acts. There is no immunity for unofficial acts. So if he's vetoing laws, if he's pardoning people, you can't try him for that. You can't say, oh, he shouldn't have vetoed that law. That's against the law. You know, you can't prosecute him. Otherwise, we would have chaos, right? Now, Sonia Sotomayor dissented, and her argument is, in my opinion, hysterical, but it is an American argument. And that's the thing you have. That's why you have to think about all these things so carefully, right? She says the president of the United States is the most powerful person in the country and possibly the world. When he uses his official powers in any way under the majority's reasoning, he now will be insulated from criminal prosecution. Orders the Navy SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival? Immune. Organizes a military coup to hold on to power? Immune. Takes a bribe in exchange for a pardon? Immune, 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 immune. You know, that's an American argument, right? That's don't give him too much power, right? And Joe Biden picks it up. Here is what Biden said, cut seven.
This nation was founded on the principle that there are no kings in America. Each of us is equal before the law. No one is above the law, not even the President of the United States. Today's Supreme Court decision on presidential immunity, that fundamentally changed. For all practical purposes, today's decision almost certainly means that there are virtually no limits on what a president can do. This is a fundamentally new principle, and it's a dangerous precedent, because the power of the office will no longer be constrained by the law, even including the Supreme Court of the United States. The only limits will be self-imposed by the president alone.
Now, if that argument were true, it would be a good argument, right? But first, let's talk about the fact that this is unprecedented, totally new. Why did the court have to decide this? It had to decide this because in a truly unprecedented action, Democrats conspired to accuse Trump on a, let's call it a trumped-up charge in New York, and this is what he was appealing. I mean, it's absurd. It is absurd what they did. Nobody knows what he was charged with. They keep saying, oh, he's a convicted felon. Nobody even knows what the felony is. He should have been fined if they wanted to for basically a bookkeeping error. And now, by the way, the corrupt judge in New York, Merchant, says he has postponed his sentencing to 9/18, September 18, because it's instead of July 11th. Because it's possible some of the testimony was tainted by this decision. It might have been covered by this immunity and therefore not been able to be used as evidence of a crime. But really, the thing is, this decision is so limited because it stops chaos. Here is Bill Barr. I'm the only person who still loves Bill Barr. I think he's great. But he talks about what this decision really says, cut nine.
He has the right to go and tell the Department of Justice to investigate something. But an example used by Justice Sotomayor was, oh, then he can fabricate evidence, give the evidence to the department, and tell them to use that to indict them. He doesn't have authority to fabricate evidence. That's not carrying out an executive function. And the worst example, I think, the one that makes no sense whatsoever, is the idea that he can use SEAL Team 6 to kill a political opponent. The president has the authority to defend the country against foreign enemies, armed conflict, and so forth. He has the authority to direct the justice system against criminals at home. He doesn't have authority to go and assassinate people. So whether he uses the SEAL team or a private hitman, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make it a carrying out of his authority. So all these horror stories really are false.
And it really, I mean, they don't like it because Trump benefits from it right now. But, you know, the war on terror was never really a declared war. And Barack Obama had a policy of targeted killing to take out terrorists. And he accidentally killed a 16-year-old boy who was an American citizen. The ACLU protested over it. But you want to, you know, I know I don't like Obama any more than you guys do, but still, you don't want him prosecuted for manslaughter. He was trying to protect the country. He was killing terrorists. As he said, he was very good at killing people. And, you know, he could be prosecuted for manslaughter. We can't have our courts. I mean, this would be endless. It would be endless. They just think the press is going to defend them because the press defends their power. But remember, conservatives can amass power, too, and they can start using, you know, the legal system, too. And then they start prosecuting Obama for manslaughter because he droned an innocent 16-year-old American citizen while trying to kill a terrorist. You know, the court has become one of the mainstays. They're now accusing Roberts of amassing power to the court, but I don't think that's fair. I think what he is trying to do is suck it away from these unelected places and try and stop it from coagulating in the government. The court has become one of the mainstays for that. This Chevron news, you know, the big news is never the big news, right? The stuff we're talking about is almost never what's really happening. That's why 10 years later, people look back and say, well, wait, that was really a turning point. This Chevron thing is huge. The Claremont Institute has been fighting this fight forever. The Chevron document was basically, if Congress has not directly addressed a question at the center of a dispute, a court was supposed to uphold the agency's interpretation of the statute as long as it was reasonable. So you appealed to the agency that had taken away your toilet because they declared it a waterway, and they said, no, our decision was right. That was your appeal. You had to appeal to the people who were trying to take your rights away. John Roberts wrote this decision, too. He takes away they write this Chevron deferral. Basically, he's giving the power back to Congress and the courts, because the courts are going to have to decide some of these things. But when you even think about the case, it was from the fact that an agency had required that fishermen put observers on board their vessels to collect data about their catches to monitor overfishing. And this cost $710 a day, and the agency couldn't afford to do that. So they just made a new rule that the fishermen had to pay to carry out the regulations. And the fishermen are like, wait a minute, you know, you're supposed to appeal to them? No, I appealed that decision. Well, no, we want your $700. So we say our decision is right. I mean, it just shows you how ridiculous it is. So, of course, the Democrats once again unleashed, this is taking away that power of the bureaucracy, which is now one of the biggest threats. This is the New York Times, love the bureaucracy. Oh, the deep state, they keep complaining about the deep state, but it's saving our democracy. The hell you say, the hell you say. And this thing, you know, Chuck Schumer said, this disgraceful decision by the MAGA Supreme Court, which is comprised of three justices appointed by Mr. Trump himself, enables the former president to weaken our democracy by breaking the law. Well, the Wall Street Journal wrote about Imperial SCOTUS blog, which crunched the statistics from 2023. 45.8%, 46% of cases were unanimous. So the justices agreed. Nine justices agreed that Colorado can't remove Donald Trump's name from the ballot. They were complaining about that one. Nine justices agreed that pro-life doctors lack the standing to sue the Food and Drug Administration over the abortion pill. Nine justices agreed that the National Rifle Association can sue when New York regulators were coercing insurers to stop doing business with them. And the list goes on. There are 22 cases decided, 6-3 this term, but only half of those, only 11 of them, came from the political divisions in the court. People were mixed up. You know, there were people on all sides. And so this whole idea of this MAGA court is untrue. It's untrue. There are moments when the political opinions matter and they come to the fore, like Sotomayor suddenly saying that the president can use SEAL Team 6 to assassinate people, but it's all a lie. So look, again, I'm not protecting Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump is the wrench in the power structure, obviously. It's obvious because they're also against him. They're all against him. Every single institute of power, the government, the Hollywood, the news media, the academies, they are all against them. There's nobody they're resisting except the people having power. And that's why I'm supporting Trump. I'm not supporting him for any love of him. I'm supporting him because they don't like him, and they don't like him because he's on his own. That's what Dave Chappelle was joking about when Trump said, I know they're corrupt because I've used their corruption, right? So this is July 4th. Remember, it's not Trump we're protecting. We're not protecting the GOP. We're not protecting anybody. The powerful want us to hate one another so they can seize power, and I want the powerful at each other's throats so the power remains where it belongs with you, we, the people. Chapter 3, Eating the Dog Food. So I've been picking on Emma Tucker, who's the new editor at the Wall Street Journal, because I've noticed just a lot of creeping wokeism on Newsside. And Newsside at the Wall Street Journal has always been to the left of the opinion page, and they've gotten more and more that way. I'm going to offer Emma a tentative apology here because, you know, the Newsside has slid, and it was before she got there. You know, the other day there was an article about men who support abortion. They believe that killing babies is right. Of course they do, right? And they want to be able to use women without consequences. And the headline was, Men Step Up. And I thought, screw you, you know, come on. You know, just play it straight. Here's a story about men who support abortion rights. You know, why that's a story, I don't know, but still. However, so there's a lot of wokeness on the news side. However, their investigative reporting has been excellent and fair. Not just the one about Biden getting older. They have gone after Elon Musk. They've gone after Trump. They go after everybody. Now, the reason I say a tentative apology is I don't know when those stories were signed. Investigative stories take a long time, so maybe they were in place before Emma got there. But maybe Emma trying to clean up the stable too. So I'm not an insider there. I don't know. But I'm going to keep an eye on it because it's really the last major newspaper in America that is standing up for the founder. Now they've done an investigative story about the World Economic Forum, which is, of course, one of the symbols of power that the people are trying to fight back against. This idea of globalism that defeats the possibility of having a nation state that will defend the principles that we have here, right? I don't want to know how Kuwait thinks America should be governed. I'm completely uninterested in what Saudi Arabia thinks I should be doing. I only care about the America under the founding. That's what I believe in. That's who I am. That's what formed me. That's what gave me the beautiful life I have. That's why people are coming over the border without surcease. So the Wall Street Journal does an excellent investigation on Davos, right? This is where Davos man gets together and says why we should all be eating bugs and they should be in control of everything we do. It says, behind Davos, claims of a toxic workplace despite its lofty goals. The World Economic Forum has faced numerous accusations of sexual harassment and discrimination against women and black people. Carl Schwab, who's the silly little man in the space outfit who runs the place, Schwab has been engaging in behavior that would violate standard workplace policies of the forum's leading corporate partners. One episode still making the rounds among staffers is the time in 2017 Schwab tapped a young woman to lead an initiative for startups. She had discovered she was pregnant, and during her first few days on the job, went into Schwab's office to tell him in Geneva. Schwab grew upset that she wouldn't be able to continue working at the same pace because she was pregnant. People familiar with the incident said and told her she wasn't suited for her new leadership role. She was pushed out after what the forum said was a brief trial period. But under Schwab's decades-long oversight, the forum has allowed to fester an atmosphere hostile to women and black people in its own workplace, according to internal complaints, email exchanges, interviews. This proves what I'm saying, by the way. The powerful always argue that they're for the little guy. They are never for the little guy. The powerful are for more power. That is what they are for all the time, every time, always. When you find a George Washington who gives up power, you name cities after him, you name buildings after him, you name colleges after him, you name everything. Everything is George because of that. Because that's how remarkable it is that he turned over an empire in order to make people free. That's how amazing that is. They talk about more about the female staffers being pushed out or otherwise having their career suffered for being pregnant. Now, before I say get to my point here, I want to just play a quick clip to remind you of an exchange between Senator Ted Cruz, my political spirit animal, and the head of the Human Rights Commission, Kelly Robinson. Cruz had been talking to Riley Gaines, our wonderful friend Riley Gaines, the swimmer, who was talking about the differences between men and women. I always love what Riley said. She said, you know what the differences are. Well, she was talking about that in terms of athletics, and Cruz turned on the head of the Human Rights Commission, Kelly Robinson, for this exchange, cut 11.
Ms. Robinson, do you agree with Ms. Gaines that there's a difference between women and men?
If the question is about trans women...
I'm just asking, is there a difference between women and men?
What I can say is that the NCAA has rules in place. They've had rules in place for the last decade, and when this competition...
Okay, I'm going to try again.
The rules were clear.
Do you believe there's a difference between women and men? It's a yes-no question. Do you believe there's a difference?
Well, I think that we're talking about this case with the
NCAA. No, I'm asking a question. Do you believe there's a difference between women and men? Most people could answer this very simply. I'm curious if you're willing to do so.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just putting it into the context of
is
the
conversation
that we're having. I think that there are definitions related to sex.
Is that a yes? So I'm trying to get a yes or no. I'm not trying to get a speech.
Oh,
is there a difference between women and men?
I think that there are definitions for biological sex.
Okay, so you're not answering that.
All right. Now, why am I playing that? Right after talking about how Davos and the powerful people who want to run the world in Davos because they think they're smarter than everybody else, and they're picking on women, and they're picking on women on being and being... especially women getting pregnant. This is why, this is one of the reasons why I hammer away at the respect and elevation we should give to at-home mothers and the fathers who support them. This is why feminism and its hostility to homemakers is so central to the fight that we are in, right? It's not like I hate feminists, and it's not like I think a woman who wants to do something else other than motherhood is a bad person. It's not, it has nothing to do with this. It has to do with elevating this central role that women have in the lives of human beings, which if you haven't noticed, is us, right? In the spirit world, right? In the gospel story, the central character who represents humanity, right? Jesus represents God in humanity, in the form of humanity, but the central character who represents humanity is Mary. And what is Mary? She is all mom all the time. Why? Because being a mom is different than having power. Being a mom is about sacrificial love. In the material world, power is everything. If there is no God, power is everything. If we are not spirits, power is everything. It's the only reason. It's all morality is just a masquerade for power. Like Michel Foucault said, it's all a big scam. But if there's a spiritual world, and we all know there's a spiritual world, then love actually trumps power, and it has to be protected by power. In fact, the purpose of power is to protect love. And where does that take place? It takes place in the home, in motherhood. It is why Mary is the central representative of human beings in the spiritual world, in our main religion, which is Christianity. Who doesn't want women in the home? Socialists and capitalists. Those are the two kinds of people who do not want women in the home. The left and the right. Everybody else wants women in the home taking care of children, but the left and the right do not. Why? Okay. The capitalists want women in the workforce. They love it. They love capitalists. No, they want it in the workforce. Listen, I work with a lot of capitalists. I know a lot of capitalists. They talk about motherhood sometimes, but they want women back in the workplace. They're the ones who are saying, we need more, daycare in the workplace. No, you don't. You need more mothers at home. We need to have an economy that supports mothers at home. They are the center of human life. They are the creators of human life, not just physically, but also spiritually, because a mother's interactions with a baby give that baby its individuality. But bringing women into the workplace doubles the amount of workers, halves their power, stagnates their wages. That's it. That's why, right? Having women go home, having men want to be paid to support them means wages go up and workers have more power. The left want women in the workplace because it's a materialist philosophy. It's an anti-spiritual philosophy, and women at home destroy the little governments of freedom, the family, that challenge big government, the big government of utopian slavery. In the fight for freedom, just like when you were a little baby, the last line of defense and the first line of defense is mom. And this is a huge political issue. It's the Terminator principle. When the machines take over and humans are trying to fight back to get their rights back, do they kill the rebel leader? No. They send Arnold Schwarzenegger back in time to kill his mother, because that's the problem. Later in the sequels of Terminator, Sarah Connor becomes this big macho muscle girl with a big gun. No. In the first one, she's just a girl. That is her power. She's talking about getting her hair done. She's talking about going on dates. She's talking about going on clubs. But she's mom. That's why they send Schwarzenegger back to kill her. I'm not romanticizing mothers. I know there are plenty of bad women, just like bad men. We're all what we are. We're all broken people. There's only one power center that understands the importance of women, and they're a power center too, and that's the church. And they can be corrupt too, and they can be small-minded, and they can be oppressive. But they, because of their own self-interest, understand that women are the power, and that is why we protect the church as well. People write to me, women write to me all the time and say, it's so wonderful that you support women. Listen, like everybody else, I'm self-interested. I do not want a world that is run by the powerful, for the powerful, all the time. Families are the best government against government. They are the government against government. They are run by mothers. They're built by mothers. Mothers are particularly evolved to do that chore. We should elevate that in everything we do, and we should stop giving it lip service and then pay and then send them off to work in capitalist institutions. We really have to turn feminism on its head. Feminism had a point. It was to solve the problem of the fact that women's economic power had been destroyed by the Industrial Revolution. Computers can bring that back by giving them work at home that they can do. It's important and gives them economic power. That's not the problem. The problem is we need them in the home because they are the center of human life and the center of freedom. All right, final chapter, The Things of Caesar. So I want to give myself a little plug here. I would like you to come, if you can, to the newjerusalem.substack.com. My essay, it's me and Spencer Clavin, no relation, having a conversation about God in the transhuman world, in this world that we are moving into. And every month, one of us writes an essay. I wrote the essay this month. I think it's one of my best essays, and it's called The Age of Willful Ignorance. The Daily Wire was kind enough to also run the piece with a link to the newjerusalem.substack.com. But please come and look at this, because this conversation is unique. It is going on nowhere else. And it's important because of what I'm talking about, because it's only in the spiritual world, it's only in a world of spirit that power comes in second place, that power is in service to love. That's the gospel. That, if I had to put the gospel into one sentence, power is in the service of love, that would be what it is. So my essay this month begins with the fact that Oklahoma's top educational official ordered the state's public schools to teach the Bible. And this is what State School Superintendent Ryan Walter said. He said, the Bible is an indispensable historical and cultural touchstone. I'm laughing because this is so obvious. It's an indispensable historical and cultural touchstone. Without basic knowledge of it, Oklahoma students are unable to properly contextualize the foundation of our nation. So, of course, the establishment went crazy. The power brokers went crazy. The New York Times, the servants of power, that's what they are, the servants of power went crazy. They said, the New York Times said, this is an extraordinary move that blurs the lines between religious instruction and public education. Why is it so important that there be no God? My point in my essay is that you can't understand anything about the West without thinking about God and the Bible. You can't understand Western man, you can't understand Western history, you can't understand literature, art, philosophy, without talking about the context of faith. And this is true whether you believe in God or not. It doesn't matter. God may just be a psychic construct. We may just want there to be a God. That doesn't matter. It's still one of our chief desires. You know, Aristotle, and I'm taking some of this from this essay, Aristotle talked about the chief good being happiness, because happiness is a good unto itself, so that everything tends toward happiness, and happiness is a spiritual thing tied to virtue, right? And in the West, virtue has always been established through trying to determine the will of God. So people have drives, right? They want to survive. So the pressures of survival have made us evolve in certain ways. We all know this. This is the kind of evolution we all believe in, that the pressures of survival make us evolve in certain ways. So you can't understand people if you don't talk about the pressures of survival. We all want to reproduce, right? That is one of our main instincts. You can't understand women without talking about the maternal instinct. You can't understand men without talking about their desire to have lots of women, right? This is part of who they are. Now, you could say, well, you know, I have no maternal instinct, or my Aunt Tilda has no maternal instinct. It doesn't matter. That takes place in the context of the norm. The norm is what shapes human beings. So these are the drives we have, and one of the drives we have is happiness, and happiness is always tied to God. And, you know, this is something that Blaise Pascal, one of the great scientists, mathematicians, and also a believer, said, the present never satisfies us, experience dupes us, and from misfortune to misfortune leads us to death, their eternal crown. These are all inadequate because the infinite abyss can only be filled by an infinite and immutable object, that is to say, only by God himself. So, in other words, because we want happiness, because we all want happiness, and because happiness is tied to virtue, and because virtue is tied to God, you can't understand our drives without this. And we have entered a time in which, and again, it doesn't have to do with whether there is a God or not. It just has to do with our desire for God. Just like when you don't satisfy your sexual desires, they go elsewhere. Same thing when you have a desire for God. If there's no God, we're going to turn that desire to something else. But we've entered a time in which the elite are desperate to ignore God's presence. They want to take him out of the public schools always. That is why. They take great philosophers like C.S. Lewis and René Girard, and they put them beneath guys like Nietzsche and Foucault, because Nietzsche and Foucault were all about the power. They elevate guys like Richard Dawkins and Steven Pinker and Yuval Harari, all very intelligent men, but all people who know nothing about theology and who spread their atheism through ignorance. They spread it through ignorance. They know about their subjects, but they do not know what religious people think. Barton Swaim, my favorite writer at the Wall Street Journal, excellent, excellent writer, He talks about the fact, he reviews a lot of biographies, and he says in biographies, they cut God out. If the person they're doing the biography of has faith, they minimize that for no reason, and they basically say he didn't really have faith, or it was about something else. They do it in the movies. If you saw Unbroken about Louis Zamperini, his faith, which was at the center of his life, was made into a footnote. Johnny Cash, they turned it into a two-second thing. This idea of keeping God out of the conversation, it may have started fighting the church and fighting church corruption or something like this, but now it just reminds me of Satan's rebellion in Paradise Lost. Satan wanted to take over reality and create reality on his own and create himself, and we wanted to find our own natures, our own genders, our own right and wrong. And Satan wanted to make a heaven of hell a hell of heaven, and ultimately found out that wherever he went, it was hell, because he had left behind God. So this is just something that I think is important. It's hard. I think even people, Spencer pointed out in his response to my essay, he pointed out that even Christians are afraid to talk about God in the context of practical conversations. I've heard lots of people on the right say, well, you can't argue from God. Well, you can argue from the desire for God. You can argue from the fact that God exists in our hearts and minds, and that we look for happiness, and that we can't have happiness. I mean, every research or poll has found that religious people are happier. You have to talk about it. You have to talk about it, and you have to allow the voices who found God, the people who found God, the Johnny Cashes, the Louis Emperor, you have to let them speak. You have to talk about C.S. Lewis when you talk about Sigmund Freud. You have to talk about Dostoevsky when you talk about Nietzsche. You have to talk about the other side. It is a conversation, and they're trying to shut it down, and Oklahoma is right, and the people who want to bring back the Ten Commandments are right. It should be part of our culture. It should be part of our life, and this depends on all of us, and it has to do with motherhood. It has to do with family. It has to do with freedom. All of those things come about through England, but through a realm of thought that had to do with God, whether it was the gods of the Romans and the Greeks, or whether it was the God of Jerusalem, the Jewish God. All of those things come to us and formed who we are, and the fact that they won't talk about us, that silence is the place where power collects. That silence is the power place where power collects. And you want to talk truth to power, it begins with talking honestly about your faith and talking honestly about the things we're looking for and where happiness really comes from. All right, my friends, gather around. This 4th of July weekend, while the left is busy trying to rewrite history, we at Daily Wire Plus are going to make history by offering a deal that would make even the founding fathers do a double take. Buy 1 year of Daily Wire Plus, you get another year free. That is right, 2 years of unadulterated, no-holds-barred truth for the price of one. You'll get the Andrew Klavan Show, where we cut through the nonsense and get to the heart of what matters, or just joke around, along with more of the most trusted voices in conservative media. But wait, there's more. I'm channeling a late-night infomercial. You'll get access to our full library of films, documentaries, and series that are reshaping culture. The offer's simple. 1 year paid, 1 year free. No smoke, no mirrors, no leftist doublespeak. Just straight-up value for your hard-earned dollar. But like a good fireworks show, this deal will not last forever. Head over to dailywireplus.com right now. Klavan clapbacks.
This is something far worse than occurred in Watergate.
It never stops. All right, from Rebecca, I just wanted to thank you for your lighthearted program of July 1st. I guess that was the last day of June, actually. All day, I've been fighting claustrophobia and depression from seeing the precarious situation our country is in. This is after the debate, exacerbated by my watching too many podcasts about it. Then I tuned into your holy crap program, and you had me laughing out loud. I really appreciate you. Keep up the good work, Rebecca in rural Oregon. Yes, there are conservatives in Oregon. Now, I read this. I don't like to just read things that compliment me, although please, you're always welcome to write in and compliment me. But I read this because I think this is a huge problem, let's say among the Daily Wire audience, among conservatives in general, is this feeling of fear and claustrophobia and worry, anxiety, I guess is the word. When I was a young man, before I became sane, I was afraid of flying. I had a terrible fear of flying, that real phobia about flying. And I was in a plane that was hit by lightning once. I was in some really terrible situation. I would just fall apart. I tried to overcome it by getting into a small plane with a friend who flew small planes. And I went into shock. I actually went into shock. That's how frightened I was. And then this miracle happened in my life. It happened in my late 20s when I went to a psychiatrist. And truly, by the work of God, I went sane. I've never seen it happen to anybody else, but it happened to me. And this fear just vanished. I never really dealt with it. It didn't have to do with something about when I was a kid, the things that would happen between me and my father when I was a kid in planes. So it did have to do with psychological reasons, but I didn't talk about any of that. It just went away. And so it went away, and I decided, well, now I've got an opening. I'm going to push forward. I'm going to learn to fly a plane. I'm going to get a pilot's license. And so I drove out. I was had a place in Connecticut, and I drove out into New York. You know, obviously I was filled with dread, right? Because the last time I'd been in a small plane, I have gone into shock, and I thought, oh my God, this might happen again. And even though I'm not afraid of flying in commercial airlines anymore, it's really tough to be in these little planes. And I drove out there, and I'll always remember that he was my first instructor, great guy, turned out to be a conservative, as I found out decades later. But he walked out, and I got out of my car, and he said, well, you've just been through the most dangerous part of your trip, namely driving in a car. And I got into the plane, and of course, I wasn't afraid at all, because this thing had passed. There were times I still got nauseous in planes because of the winds and their little things, they get tossed around. And so once or twice I had to bring the plane down, which was always embarrassing, but you know, so what? 90% of our anxiety is dread of things that are not gonna happen. So much of our anxiety is dread of things that are not gonna happen. And what is that about? It's about thinking we do not have what it takes to deal with the thing when it happens, because bad things do happen. I'm not a happy talk person. I'm not a person who thinks everything's going to be okay. That's not my point at all. My point is that when bad things happen, you will have what you need to deal with it. This is the reason that you should be upright at all times and never give in to anxiety, because if the thing isn't happening now, you may see things that you want to prevent, and that's a good thing, but you do not have to live in fear. There's no point to it. It does nothing. It fixes nothing. This is the day that we were given. We should rejoice in it and be glad. You know, when I was in Germany on my vacation, that wonderful vacation I still miss, we were in a hotel in Freiburg, and outside our window, there was a beautiful courtyard, and there was a music concert going on. It was driving us crazy. But on Sunday, half the time it was rock music, but on Sunday it became religious music, and they started playing one of my favorite hymns. It was German. It took me a minute to remember what it was, but it was a hymn called Praise to the Lord, which is a hymn I just love. It has a beautiful tune. Most hymns don't. And there's this one line in it. Have you not seen all that is needed has been sent by his gracious ordaining? You have what it takes. The country may fall. I don't think it's going to. I think we're going to be okay. I really do. But we're going to go with some bad times. We're going into the tunnel. I told you this years ago. It has been dark times. I think those dark times, there's going to still be stuff going on like this. It's not going to smooth out for a long time. It's turbulence. It's turbulence. We are entering turbulence. You have what it takes. And that's the reason all our fears, all our hatreds of one another, all our anger, that's what they use. They use that stuff. And when you let it go, that's when you are free. No matter what they do to you, that's when you're free, right? If you're not afraid of what they can do to you, you are free. That's why they want you afraid. That's why they told you in COVID you were going to die. That's why they told you death was the worst thing that could possibly happen. All of these things. That's why they tell you the black guy is bad and the gay guy is bad and the white guy is bad. All of that stuff is in you for them to use. Let it go. I'm going to stop there. Become a member. You guys, become a member, because now you're going to be plunged into this blinding flavorlessness, which you know is just about the worst state you can be in, except for other states. So go to dailywire.com/subscribe. dailywire.com/subscribe. Use code CLAVEN at checkout, and you will get 2 months free on all annual plans. If you are already a member, come with me to the magical world of member blocks. Welcome to Member Block, and as always, thank you for being members and supporting us here. It will make I hope we are making your 4th of July weekend better than it even before it was. If we had fireworks, we would set them off. So, article in The Hollywood Reporter sent to me by our new producer, Tom, was doing a great job, and he sent me this article, Hillary Clinton urges Hollywood to focus on how climate change is hurting kids through the new Clinton Foundation initiative, Too Small to Fail. The former Secretary of State is trying to help people make the connections between children's mental and physical health and the impact of climate change. There's now research, she says, most people are not aware at all. The idea that young children are especially vulnerable to extreme heat, stronger storms, and wildfires. Our hope is that we can help people make the connection between children's mental and physical health and the impact of climate change. Well, the only reason children know anything about climate change and are panicking about climate change is because they're panicking. And she wants to put all this stuff into Hollywood movies. And you can bet when Hillary Clinton shows up in Hollywood, there are people who will listen to her. These people who are writing crappy shows like Lost and giving money to the Democrats. There is a connection between the crappiness of Lost, which has no way of ending, and giving money to the Democrats. It shows you don't think your ideas all the way through. So She wants to have that this anxiety sent down to children. Now, when I was a kid, right, you go out and collect leaves. And the idea was, oh, leaves are nice, they're cool leaves, right? And so you like nature. And if there was a threat to nature, you responded to it because you like nature. What they want is to just start with the fear, because the fear is the power. So this set me to thinking about the fact that I've been banging this drum about, you know, right-wing culture, about right-wingers in the arts and why we don't do them. And I'm thinking a lot about this because now there's this big opening. And I want to pause for a minute because with so much stuff has changed, so much the Daily Wire and all the new outlets, all the independent outlets that are blossoming on Substack. So much has changed since I started talking about this, when there was nothing like that. There was all establishment right and establishment left, and all they cared about the establishment. Now we have true independent voices. And yeah, there are some crazies who get in there and kind of abuse the fact that everybody's lying. So they think, well, I'm going to push forward some new conspiracy theory and everyone will believe me because there's no one to trust. But there are also great reporters out there doing great work independently. And I think that those are the people we have to search for and look for. And I would like to see more culture doing the same thing. So I'm going to give a quick shout out to the Babylon Bee. I never shout out to them because I'm just so much funnier than they are that it seems like, you know, punching down. But today they put out a piece that I just thought was hilarious about the speechwriter of Kamala Harris. And he's a six-year-old boy. And he said, let's just play a little clip of this. This is great.
Every politics person has a writer, like me, to make good words for them to say.
Space is exciting. Space, it affects us all. And it connects us all.
Got that idea when I was thinking about space and how big it is. Man, it's big. It's not all fun, though. Sometimes I have to write about bad stuff, like war.
Ukraine is a country in Europe. It exists next to another country called Russia. Russia is a bigger country. Russia is a powerful country. Russia decided to invade a smaller country called Ukraine. So basically, that's wrong.
It's cool to see the words I've typed actually get set on TV. It's fun.
That's great, because her speeches really do sound like they're written by a six-year-old. So good for the Babylon Bee. Really funny stuff. Now, satire is great, and we've been making fun of the left here for years, and I think that's terrific. But again, it is reactive, right? They have to do something stupid before we can make fun of them. So we have to wait for them. And one of the things about the arts is the arts are creative, and they should put forward some kind of positive view. I don't mean that they have to be happy. I don't mean that they have to have solutions for things, but I mean they have to exist in a reality that reflects reality. That's how the arts work. And one of the reasons I support the outsiders in the world, you know, the gays and the Jews and all this stuff, is because they tend to be good. Outsiders tend to be good at doing art. Why? Because they see the culture they're in from a little bit of a distant perspective. They have a little bit of a step back. You know, why is the greatest Christmas song written by Irving Berlin, a Jewish guy, White Christmas? Because it has this kind of wistfulness of an outsider. It understands what the norms are, but it brings this kind of tenderness to it that I'm not sure that people who are born within that have. Because I always used to tease my wife that no one can love Christmas like a Jew because he didn't have his father coming home drunk, or he didn't have, you know, the kids fighting, the parents fighting, ruining your Christmases when you were kids, because Jewish kids didn't have Christmas. So when they get to it as an adult, they're like, hey, it's great, you know, you get snow, you get a tree, you get presents. And so that kind of outsiderness, if you think of Tennessee Williams, a great gay playwright, he wrote Streetcar Named Desire. And if you watch Streetcar Named Desire, it's really a gay play in that it over represents the differences between men and women. You know, it's the relationships is really all the characters not are really men when you think about it. But because they're so overdone, the women are so overwomanly and the men are so overmanly that it's only a gay fantasy. But by doing that, he does bring out some truths about men and women that maybe men and women wouldn't see. And I think that that's a funny thing about the arts, is that it does promote people on the outside, and it promotes people who are a little broken, I think, too. I think that it's very rare It happens. It does happen, but it's very rare to have people like me in the arts who are sane. Most people in the arts are a little bit crazy, and it does drive you crazy. You have to do a lot of work to keep your spirits and your mentality together. Stories that I don't see us telling, and this really bothers me, the stories I don't see us telling are stories that actually support the things that we are. You want to support businesses? It doesn't have to be Ayn Rand, in which only the businessman is right. But why don't we do stories about guys who find, you know, who do fracking and find energy and get shut down by the government and have to battle the government to do their business? Ghostbusters was kind of like that. The EPA, people forget, the EPA was the villain in Ghostbusters, and it was their regulations that made the evil store up. It was a very, very, libertarian movie. You know, it's great that the Christians have got it. The Christians are doing good work, and their work is getting better. Their work was very sentimental, I think, for a while, but that created the audience that is attracting better artists, and better artists are moving into that. But I also think, you know, we should be making stories in which the regulators are the bad guys and the independent guy is the good guy. Stories, you know, another really good story written by a guy who probably at the time didn't know he was becoming a conservative, David Mamet, is The Untouchables, right? Where the wife and the child is the reason Elliot Ness is the ultimate good guy, the ultimate clean guy, who, when they ask him, you know, what are you going to do when prohibition is repealed? He says, I'm going to have a drink, because he's law-abiding guy and he fights the bad guys. And he has to sometimes go learn to go beyond the law in order to fight the bad guys. That's what that story is about. Why aren't we making those stories? Why do we keep, you know, we keep kind of curling back into the religious world, and I believe in the religious world, and I'm very much in favor of having religious heroes. Believing in God doesn't change reality. God is reality. And so the bad things that happen and the dramas that happen and the evils that happen still take place. And I always remember that guy who criticized Game of Thrones by saying, this show is taking place as if there were never a Jesus Christ. Well, no, it's not. We're still in this power fight. We're still in a fight where good people are beheaded because they don't play the power game. We're still in the evil world. Jesus said we were in the evil world. He simply said he had opened a doorway into another way of looking at that world. Macbeth is one of my favorite plays, Shakespeare's Macbeth, because it shows you that evil detaches you from meaning. That, to me, is the theme of that play, that evil might make you king. It might make you king, but it detaches you from everything that makes life worthwhile. It's like when you play the game to win the game of power, you lose everything that's worthwhile, including love and including meaning. And so I think that some of the worst tendencies of the right, the tendency to react, the tendency to exclude, I believe we should elevate normality. I believe we should elevate men and women and wives and husbands, but I believe we should tolerate and be kind and loving to the people on the outside. I believe we should elevate Christianity, that we should be kind and loving to the people on the outside and include them and know what their talents are and use their talents. Some of the worst parts of the right are playing into our slow off the mark of creating art that really, really moves people. And I think we should look at the work like American Sniper and like the Mammoth Picture of the Untouchables and all of those things to see how this is done and really start to make the good stuff, because this is our opening. Look at the movie theaters. There is nothing playing. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen a summer like this where there are no movies that anybody wants to go see. And that's because the left has failed, but we have not yet begun to succeed. And we really have to start thinking about this the way Hillary Clinton is planning it. Let her make her terrorizing children environmental movies. But let's start to make movies about what we believe and what we think reality actually looks like, because we can do it better if we try. All right, I got to stop there. It is time to be Clavenless once again. And I'm sorry for that, but there's nothing I can absolutely do about it. It is a darkness unlike any other darkness, but we'll be back Wednesday with the interview. And next Friday, we will be back. You won't, because you'll be in the Clavenless darkness. But if you crawl out using scratching and clawing and fighting your way out, we will be back on Friday with the Andrew Klavan Show. I'm Andrew Klavan. The Andrew Klavan Show is executive produced by Lisa Bacon. Our producer and editor is Danny D'Amico. Associate producer is Finn Pope, directed by Mark Jones and Trey Miller. Production manager, Paul Wadowski. Audio is mixed by Mike Coromina, Ryan Reese, and Josh Ostroff. thumbnail design, Clay Hyder, hair and makeup, Cherokee Hart, wardrobe, Kristen Galarraga and Elizabeth Fox. Intro images, Cynthia Angulo, show art, Kat Darnell, studio, camera and equipment management, Patrick Kennedy, broadcast engineer, Jeff Galvin, director of post-production, Matthew Kemp, director of production, Mathis Glover, executive in charge of production, David Wormus, executive producer, Jeremy Boring,